Welcome to This Business of Music and Poetry podcast, where the life of a creative meets the real world. Mention musician, poet, and above all, creative entrepreneur. Experience, host of Dante's Old South on NPR, poet and author of The Draw of Broken Eyes and Whirling Metaphysics, Exiles of Eden, and Athena Departs, The Gospel of a Man Apart. Our guest today is the dynamic Casanova Green. He's a writer, a singer-songwriter, educator, and pastor. He has an MFA in creative writing. He's a member of the Southern Collective Experience. He's been published in several publications, including the Blue Mountain Review, Raw Art Review, the Fredericksburg's Literary and Art Review, among others. He's done extensive ministry work since the age of 9 and has served as worship leader and choir director for 20 years. He released his first album, A Worshipper Mentality, in January 2016 and is currently working on his second and third albums, Songs from the Journey Parts 1 and 2, which will be released in 2019 and 2020. Currently, he serves as a lead pastor of True Vision Christian Community based in Lancaster, Ohio, where he and his family reside, and he is the head of CG Create. Without any further ado, here's Casanova Green.
Today we have professor, poet, musician, father, and husband, Mr. Casanova Green. Casanova, how are you doing?
Doing quite good. Can't complain.
Well, good. And, you know, again, like with me, it's like if I could complain, I wouldn't do it because who wants to hear it anyway? Right. now, this is an extremely nerve-wracking yet exciting point in your life, professionally and personally, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us what you have on deck. You have a book in the works. You have a CD in the works. You teach. You have a robust home life. Give us, in the order in which you wish us to receive it, what's going on in your life.
Okay, as we say at my house, see why that happened. Well, no. Okay, so I'm happily married to an amazing woman. She's awesome, like, especially right now. She's like the best wife ever. Son, I have a 2-year-old son. Cute, looks like me, acts like me, but God help us all. you'll find out real quick. I'm a jokester. So I'm not just working on one album, Clifford. I'm working on two. It's called Songs from the Journey. This year marks 20 years of me being in music ministry. And I made a promise that after I finished grad school, I was going to record another album. And I had so much content, I couldn't just do it once.
Right.
So we recorded part one in February in Lancaster, Ohio, where I live. And it should be coming out around August 9th. I'm not going to say a definite August 9th. So just look around that date, a little bit after it will be coming out. The single should actually be coming out in July. I'm excited. I love this song. And it's not even one of the old ones. It's a new brand spanking. No one's heard a new one. This song, if you're a church going person, this type of song would have you be like, yeah. And the song went so long, we split it into two parts, so you only get the first chunk of it.
Okay.
So then the second part is going to be recorded August 24th at my home church in Columbus, Ohio, Judah Christian Community. Woo! And that should be out in February of next year, with the single coming out in either December or January. So there's that. And then I also pastor a church, True Vision Christian Community. Shout out to TVCC. We have our main location in Lancaster. We have a second location in Guntersville, Alabama. What? And then we're working on planning two or three more in the next 2 years. Now, here's the thing about my church. We are not big. There's like 10 of us.
Yeah.
there's like 10 in Lancaster, but our vision's always been to grow this thing. I never want to be at one church of 6,000. I want to be 60 churches of 100.
Yeah.
So we can really make some impact and do some things. And I'm also an adjunct instructor at Columbus State Community College. Woo! Mm-hmm. Oh, Columbus State! I love it here. Like, you have no idea how much I love it here. And I was a high school teacher for 9 years, recently ended that in June. And life has been interesting. And also, the big part, I've started a business called CG Create LLC, which is with the goal to inspire creativity and growth. And it's the place where you get all of me. You get the singing, you get the lecturing, you get the poetry, you get the preaching, get all that in one spot, which is a fairly interesting and new concept for a lot of people, because they're like, everything's in one spot. Yes, everything's in one spot.
And that's what I love about getting folks that are in the doing. They're actually in the creation process and have both feet on the ground and brick and mortar in place, because you hear so often of people that are going to do something, dreaming to do something. And of course, that's where it's got to start. Let's begin with your church, you know, from the concept in your mind to actually finding room and success in that arena. How did you go about that? What's the business angle for me?
The business angle is make sure you do the proper paperwork. That's
Amen.
Don't just be like, I'm going to start a church in my basement and you haven't even registered with your state. Let's get that right first. Make sure you do the proper paperwork. With us being so small, it's been a learning curve, because I was used to doing being the worship leader or minister of music. I was used to, like, I'll go travel and preach after church and then come back. But actually having my own, it's been a major learning experience. I'm just going to tell you right now, church planning is not for the faint of heart. And that's a lot of people think you just start a church. You can't just, like, get up and start a church. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time.
Well, I absolutely can imagine that. You know, it's funny. Here's something, Kaz, that you don't know about me, is that, so I just in June stepped away from being a Catholic school music and drama teacher, which included me doing tons and tons of liturgical music, mass music, worship music as well. And so I've been immersed in that world of music and, you know, and all of that as well. So, I mean, I just came off of teaching full time and, you know, 59 different performances in the case of the school year and all that stuff too. So I've been right smack in the middle of that and all the meetings about church growth and all that. Although Catholic Church is a little bit different, but you get what I'm saying. So I can appreciate what you're talking about.
Right. That's what I tell people. It's a lot of work, but if you're doing it for the right reasons, it's worth it.
Right.
This is what I tell people. As long as I sow a seed, I have done my job. And we might be small, but don't get it twisted. We're powerful.
Yeah.
And just watching people grow, dealing with a lot of people who are looking for a second chance in life, who are, you know, they've probably been in the church all their lives, but they're seeking something different, seeking something new. With our area, it's very homogenous. So seeking something multicultural. Because, you know, all the churches, not really all, I'm not going to say all, because people get mad at me if I say all, but there's a lot of churches who are very cookie cutter and follow the same formula. You get the same thing at every place, but people are not being represented. Groups are not being represented. And I know with True Vision, our goal has always been to be a hub for everybody to feel welcome, to worship, not just we have to worship this one way, worship in every way that is represented in that room. So if I got to sing in French, Spanish, Swahili, and any other language, that's fine. I've done it for years.
Yep. So
nothing new. And the word of God covers everybody. It's not just for the white folk. It's not just for the black folk. This word for everybody. And my job as a pastor is to present that in such a way that it speaks of your experience, but also helps change your life.
The energy that I pick up off of you now, and I want to take everybody down memory lane here for a second.
What?
About three, not that far back, like three and a half years ago, when I came and gave a speech and Casanova was there, I remember when he walked in, it's not flattery. I preface this every time. When he walked in, there's an energy that comes with him. And he's so damn humble that you can't look like this man is radiating energy, but he's so like, it's his name. It's in his name, Casanova. He's like, and I walked up to him. And again, I've learned to temper coming in real hot because I know I kind of come across real like, hey, you look cool. Let's be friends. And they're like, oh, easy. Why are you sweating so much? And I said, well, what's your name? My name's Cliff. What's your name? He's like, Casanova. And I was like, he saw me start to shake my hand because I was like, no, it's not. And I remember like a switchblade. He reaches into his upper shirt pocket and goes, wow, and has his driver's license. And I was like, oh, yeah. And he just has that same bright energy, but that face on him that says, I might punch you in the face for asking me such a stupid question. And from that point, like, there's something that catches me the entire time. And over about 6 months of, you know, and again, I came at him. I was like, I've got this group called the Southern Collective Experience. And I don't know how to explain it right now, but you'll love it. And again, he's like, Cliff, whatever you're taking, cut it in half. Cut it in half, man. And what drew me to him, and still to this day, like, I'll call him, and it's much less now than it was, but and kind of a frantic mess. And I would come to Casanova, and he would have he has this way of distilling these huge emotions and bigger words into a message that immediately calms you down. And when he told me, oh, well, you know, I'm also a minister, because Casanova doesn't give you his resume right up front. You know, it did not shock me at all. And I tell that whole long story because the question I have next is, Casanova, how does your faith, how does that ability to have that great energy and humble disposition, how do you stay so cool in the midst of so much going on around you like that?
Okay, so I ask myself this question every time I feel like I'm about to go there. Because
right.
I tell people, yes, I'm a teddy bear, but I'm a teddy bear with claws and have no problem using them. Is it worth it? Is it worth me losing my mind, getting all bent out of shape and acting some type of way that's outside of my character because I'm feeling something in the moment? Or do I just need to step back, reflect, and then keep moving? Because, like, I hate feeling stagnant. I hate stagnation. And the biggest thing with people, when you get in your feelings, you become stagnant and you live there.
Yes.
And for some people, it lives in their mind. For me, it lives in my body. I already have enough stuff going on with that anyway. So I'm like, I choose to just keep moving forward. I'll deal with it. If it's 24 hours is still bugging me, that's when I'll handle it. If it's off of me, it's off of me.
Right. Do you find that to keep that cool, that your creative process plays an integral part in maintaining your chill?
Yeah. Because, okay, how can I best put this? For me, there's a lot of people who are like, they have, you know, the prayer life, talk about everybody need to pray. Some people's prayer life is, you know, you literally like talking to Jesus and crying out and all that stuff. For me, my language is worship. Mm-hmm. So if you see me just singing, leave me alone. I'm working something out.
And so
I would like, mm-hmm.
100% get this. Yes. Yes.
I'm like if you see me in the car and it looks like I'm just and there's nothing on the radio, I'm letting the Lord deal with it. It's become, because what people fail to realize about me is that this is a part of who I am. Even when I try to trip and like do stuff I'm not supposed to do, it still leaks out, because if it's in you, it's in you.
Do you take that what's in you and say, you know, from writing a sermon to writing a poem, what are the similarities and differences between those two for you?
They come from the same place. There's a lot of people who hate when I say this, but I'm going to say it because it's me. Y'all interview me. I don't write every day. I do not. Here's the reason why I do not. I do not want to fabricate something. I write music from a place of revelation. I write poetry from a place of revelation. I write sermons from a place of revelation. God has this funny habit of giving me I'll get the title on Tuesday, but won't get the full message until noon on Sunday. And I got to preach at 2:00.
Yes. Yes. I get this.
Because I hear people that, and again, I've always been dubious of the idea. And when people say, well, I sit down. No, I'm not dubious when they say, like, well, my practice is I sit down every day at this time and I do it for this long, because if it works for them, then that's, you know, then more power to them. But those that say, like, you have to write every single day, you know, Casanova, I have had several conversations where that again, like, it's forcing something. Then the other folks say, well, if you write when it hits you, That's a manic, sporadic creation process. And it's not that either. You know, if I sit down and I write and I don't feel it, I know it's going to be garbage. Is that kind of what happens to you?
The thing is, revelation, writing from a place of revelation, which I did a whole lecture. You remember that lecture?
Yeah, I do. I love it.
Right, writing from a place of revelation forces me to have to stay in tune with God. That's the big thing. It's like, I'm not saying, if I feel like I need to write every day, I'm going to write every day. But if I feel like if I got nothing, yeah. And I'm not going to try to force water from a dry well. I got nothing. So I need to go to the source and go, all right, what am I dealing with? Give me something. Even in my darkest places, I'm still able to get something because I'm leaning on that source. That's the difference with me and a lot of other poets, I let my Jesus flag fly. Like, you know, this is where it comes from. Even if I'm talking about social commentary, stuff I noticed, even if it's like, yeah, I royally screwed up, it's come from that place of, oh, I just see this. I just figured this out. So that's what makes it so, that's what makes the spontaneity creates a purity for it.
So, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So what I was going to briefly mention here, Kaz, is that, you know, one thing I've been really noticing I'm like you, I cannot sit still. I write, I do albums, I do music, I do all kinds of stuff because it just comes out of me. That's what it is. If I sit still, I go crazy. And I found personally that, and it sounds very much like what you're talking about, instead of me, you know, yeah, I have habits, but a lot of times the habit of me sitting down to write is just because I have so much stuff I have to get out by the end of the week. I'm just like, all right, some of the days it's just like an article, you know, it's not like the deep work. But what a lot of the focus has eventually become for me is finding ways to get myself in a revelatory state. That's actually my practice, is how do I remove the blocks from myself being able to be in that creative place? Just like wanting to get up early in the morning. Well, you handle that by going to bed the night before, right? I keep myself open. I try to keep myself in a receptive state so I can sit down and with more consistency anyway, hit that. Do you have any things that you feel like you're doing or ways that you actively try to keep yourself open for revelation to show up?
Oh man, that's a good question. And like, my brain is like 18 different. So like, I need one, maybe two. keep that. You can keep that in the podcast. It's well, yeah,
no, you don't have a choice on that one.
For me, this is just me speaking, speaking for myself. It goes back. I said this a couple weeks ago. That it's all about positioning yourself to receive it. When I throw the ball to my son, he's two. He doesn't understand catch, but he's in position to take it. It might hit him in the face. It might totally miss him because he knows daddy don't sport. you know, but then there's those times where he catches it. And for us as creative people, we always have to be in the position to receive. Like, it can't just be when you're grasping at straws, you're not able to catch what's being thrown towards you. So you have to be in a place where you're like, I see it coming. Let me catch it. Let me harness what this is. So that way this creative work, my purpose can be fulfilled.
That's it. Yes. Yeah. We're going to have to put that on a tagline somewhere in the show, man. It's for the connective tissue, you know, between the sermons and poetry, do you feel that same commonality, that same link also goes into the music you create?
Ooh, let's talk about that music. Music for me was my first language. I come from a family of singers. My mama, God rest her soul, could sing the paint off of walls. And she, like, and that was from her. That was natural ability. Now she put God in. Oh man, man. And that was our language in the house. Our house was a house, literally a house of prayer and a house of worship. So we always had music on. Like, even if we were listening to like secular stuff, it was still like had positive messages and stuff. It just, we always had this sound going. I was singing since I was 2 years old. Been leading praise and worship since I was 11, and you know, that's been That's been my communication. So I was primarily, I was a singer first. I was a worship leader first. I hate saying recording artist because that's not what I do. Honestly, and I'm like, as long as it sounds good, I don't care. I was a worship leader first, and from the worship leading came the preaching. From the worship leading came the songwriting. From the songwriting came the poetry. So everything really flows from that same vein. And there's poetry me, then there's music me. Poetry me is able to go, because poetry for me is very cerebral and also very reflective, I'm able to go into areas that I can't go into musically. But music is designed to be the sound of my heart relaying itself to God. And musical me, it's a whole different story. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. The CDs, since they're live, you hear the live sound. Mm-hmm. Like, my first CD was studio. It's like, okay, it's cool. Yeah. And then it's been 3 years and people are still bumping that CD. But mm-hmm. This sound, the special February, we recorded 2 hours straight. And cut it down to about 75 minutes. And that was 9 songs. I had to get rid of a song. Long story. and then I'm sitting down planning out August. We're at 11. I'm at 11. I'm at 11 songs already. And if I don't go chunk, chunk, chunk musically, it's a journey. Like, it's literally a journey. It's a flow of worship. That I can do 4 songs in 30 minutes and you don't, because we're in that vein, we're there, because that's how I communicate with God. And in that moment of worship, you just in the room and you just catch the vapors, just catch.
But I think you're right. I noticed this when I was, playing music for congregations that, while I was the musician, I didn't have the pastoral or the preacher role at all. I realized very early on that my emotional and spiritual state was what dictated the emotional and spiritual state to everybody else in that room. So for me, I had to be prepared to go through that and to communicate it and just get in the flow. And like you said, I'm not doing it to try to include them. I'm doing it to be fully involved in communicating that musically, so then they're caught up as well in it. And I can completely, associate with what you're talking about. I was raised in a musical family as well. We have a lot of similarities here. And when you talk about using music as your communication with God, that is something that I've said in another way, which is just my musically, poetically, writing, everything has been dedicating to kind of like having a type of spiritual love affair with God through every aspect of life. And then what I'm doing is just responding back. I'm just trying to respond back all the time. And I can completely, completely connect with what you're talking about. Sounds like we have very similar outlooks, but I love hearing someone else putting it the way you do. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
You both are like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yes! I mean, again, we can all go off and we're on the same page, and it's something that Amade and I want to make less frightening, and that's talking about the spiritual process and creation and in the business of art. Because, and again, I'm a baby stepper in this, when you make your faith center and you draw from that energy and also calm, you make sound business decisions. I think to remove that is due to being afraid to talk about it, because we all three of us know that oftentimes when faith, religion, spirituality is brought up, there's more times than not a fight to brew out of it, or if not, that it's even brought up to fight about it. So to talk about it here, I get rejuvenated, because I don't like injecting it into the conversation without some sort of foreshadowing, as it were, or build up. And before shows, I've stopped stressing about it now. I thought, well, how do I bring this up? And it naturally comes up, And the way I scoot back around is like, I just, as we're talking, I keep thinking back, Cass, to what you were saying about, you know, your creative process and the music, the sermons, and the poetry. And what it sounds like to me that you're saying is that from poetry to sermons and then to music, you become more connected to God, like from the cerebral side of the poetry to the more revelatory portion of sermons to the absolute unhindered connection to the Spirit as it comes to you in these 2-hour blocks. Is that kind of a fair assessment of how the food chain goes with you?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. While you're talking, I was thinking about this, and this is something I teach a lot of people about the concept of overflow. Mm-hmm. They talk about in the Bible, like, you know, out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water. And even talk about being vessels and pouring into vessels and how that works. A friend of mine who's another worship leader and artist was really talking about overflow, how that works, that you pour, that, you know, God pours into you as the vessel. That's your reserve. But he keeps pouring into you because he doesn't withhold any good thing from you. And that creates the overflow. The overflow is where everything else around you gets nourishment.
Mm.
So for me, I have to make sure now more than ever that I'm living in a constant state of overflow. That means, yes, I'm getting my reserve, I'm getting fed, but from being fed, I'm able to give something of worth, give something that will actually nurture people rather than just writing down words because they look good and or I have the skill to do it.
This hits dead on the hits the nail dead on the head, in that I'm guarded to say this because I don't want to start a fuss about it, but I truly believe here. I was like, if somebody says I don't want to be a jerk, but they're about to be a jerk, and I'm doing that right now. when you can possess all the technical skill in the world on designing a sermon or writing a poem or creating a song, you can have all the technical background and learning, earn every degree that goes with those professions. But if you don't have that divine fire, you don't create something that people want to read and get connected to. Does that kind of get?
Right. Let's look at that though. For a lot of people, the divine is different. I've learned that. For a lot of people, the divine experience is different. But what I've learned and always tell people is check the fruit. Always check the fruit of what's said. Even for me, when you look at my poetry, I hold nothing back. Like poetry for me was my hiding place when I was dealing with abuse. That was like how I like navigated the world. That was my secret. And I was surprised when I got into grad school, they're like, you're actually really good, like really good. And I'm like, I don't know, I just wrote this stuff, and I was in a weird place, and I just started writing. Where was I going with this? Wait a minute. All right, got it. So the divine is different for everybody, but it goes back to the fruit. What is the end result of the words that you just wrote? What's the end result of that sermon you just preached? Because, or the song you just sang, or whatever you did, the painting you painted, the sculpture you sculpted, whatever you've done, what is the end result? What is the exhale? What will people leave with once they walk away from your words? And if it's good fruit, we know where your source is. If it's, we know where your source is.
A question I always like to ask, and now it's kind of become a standard, is, you know, now you talk about like what the end result of you know, what fruit, you know, is it bitter or is it sweet? In the creation, in the growing of that fruit, in the writing of those words, what do you feel, especially as a minister? Maybe this is, in my opinion, probably the most poignant question here. What do you feel that your responsibility is to what you create?
Commit to it. If you say, I said it flat out. Like if I said, if I wrote it, I told somebody, I was talking to somebody. I said, listen, when I write a poem, when I write words, I commit to those words. Mm-hmm. Because I can't take back a book. Right. I can't take back a piece that was published. Well, I was different. I meant it in the moment. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll grow and develop over years. That means I need to write something else to counteract what was said. But commit. If you're not willing to commit, don't write. If you're not willing to commit, don't create.
Yeah. Amadeh, what do you got on that?
I think that's I think that's something that when I'm talking to people who are trying to kind of kickstart or continue on their creative journey, and a lot of times they come and I think you probably run into this all the time, and I know Cliff, you do as well, where you have these people reaching out to you. They want to be more creative, they want to start pushing things more. But when you start looking at a lot of people's lives, you realize a lot of times people live lives of very little real commitment to anything. Yes, they might commit when they get married. Of course, they commit if they have a child, you know, whatever. But talking about, you know, a lot of times people are doing the work that comes easy to them they fall into, basically. And especially when they're in the creative world, it's hard to, one, create something, put it out, but two, to really commit and putting a stake in the ground saying, I say this or I represent this is scary for some people.
For me, it's been a process. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I wasn't like, oh, blah, 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 blah. I almost dropped out of grad school before I even really started because I was so afraid of rejection. I was dealing with some past experiences from undergrad because my undergraduate degree is in English as well. So I was dealing with a lot of trauma with that. And I had to spend 2 years of literally being broken down, being in grad school, becoming a father. Like my first graduate residency, we found out we were pregnant with our son. And the ironic thing was the night before, Cliff, you remember this, the night before I read a poem about the miscarriage that had just happened.
Yep.
So I'm working through all that. I'm working through stuff when it comes to church, because before we started the church, I was supposed to take over another one, and that ain't go well. Dealing with being in a new city, you know, it was a lot of breaking myself down and living in fear. But I knew that I had something in me that had to come out. Like, mm-hmm. I had to share. There was something that needed to be shared, that needed to be said, and I had no choice but to do it. Even doing CG Create, like this hasn't been like happening for the past 2 years. This has been happening in the past 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to take these steps. And I was thinking about this. Okay, what do I say to people when it comes to like, you know, committing? You better do it afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Because you better do it when you like make it so you have no other option. You better make sure that you do it. That when you do it not just because it's a hobby, it's because it's your passion. I told my high schoolers, because a lot of them are like, oh, I want to be a rapper, blah, 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 but you can't spell. That's beside the point.
That is so true, man. Yeah.
I want to be a rapper. Okay, but you sound like all these people. Anyway. So I'm like, here's how it works. When you first start out, it's work and provision trumps.
Yep.
Your passion. You work in your passion, you build the skills, you build a name for yourself, but you're still doing your 9-to-5, you're still in school, you're still doing the things necessary for your survival. But there comes a point where it's 50-50, where that passion has grown to a place where it can sustain you a little bit, is bringing you some attention, but you still have to provide for your family. You still have to provide for yourself, because man don't work, man don't eat.
Yep.
And people don't understand that in 2019. Right. Eventually, it will shift to where your passion is what's bringing you what you want, bringing you the income while work. Okay, you might have to do like some side gigs every once in a while until it comes back to where your passion is what your passion has become your work.
Yes. Yes.
But people,
keep reaching. Go, go, go.
But people don't commit at the first step. They think they're supposed to go from zero to Kim Kardashian. That's not how this works, boo. You got to put your work in. Like you have to put work in and understand that the chances of you becoming widely famous are very slim. So you work in that lane that you can work in, and you do what you can do. And you know, if you're blessed enough to make a career out of what you out of it, do it. But if it's just a side thing that's bringing like a little extra income, do it. But you need to do it. You need to do it afraid, and you got to do it by faith. I mean, faith is not just a Christian concept. It's an everybody concept. Yep. I can't see this yet, but I'm going to make this first step. Like, I can't see what the end result is going to be, but I have to make this first step to make to see where this is going to go next.
I think that's huge. One of the, yes. I think there's a few things that this calls to mind. One of them is, especially as a musician, I have seen, and looking at fellow musicians, I think the idea of a rock star or a pop star has really poisoned the idea of being a professional musician for a lot of people, because you think you got to make it and be a multimillionaire, you know, and to be even a professional musician. Like that's the whole thing. Well, obviously that's not the whole thing. There's so many wonderful places where even, like you said, even if it is a part-time thing, your life can be so inundated and filled with music that it, you know, it's so much better than sitting there going, well, I can't be, you know, I can't be you too. So I might as well just sit back. Like it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but I see that so much. The other side of it, and I think this is the more important thing, is this is something that I've had to talk to a lot of children about too. And I'm sure you've had this conversation, but I realized, and everything changed for me when I realized that fear is not something that I overcome and then take action. I get courage after I take the action. So I kind of just have to have faith and take a step. And then after I'm doing it and after I've taken the step and as I'm moving, suddenly I start finding courage finds me. But the courage follows the faith to take that first step. And so that was, that's something I kind of heard in what you were saying in so many words. And it really resonated with me there. I think that's powerful stuff.
And Cass, I got to step in, because I mean, honestly, like I've stopped stressing and letting the powers that be take this show, because it unfolds much more. Every show is bigger than, like, it works out better than I'm like stressing about. So I've learned to stop. That being said, talking about pop stars and about the writing, I do want to throw in now that the book that was mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Southern Collective Experience, is kicking up a press. And I sat down with some of the folks that helped me design the infrastructure of this thing. And we're like, we were at a point, and we've always had a press in mind. And we're like, well, we want to do chat books. And we sat down and said, well, who do we want our flagship to be? And then I honestly think Cass has me bugged somehow, because I get this bling on my phone and I'm like in the conversation. I look down, I'm like, it's going to be Cass. Now, did he say I want a book? No. What he said was, hey, Cliff, how's it going? And I write back, hey, man, we're going to do your book. Again, that's me sweaty when we first met. Like, there's no, hey, Cass, I've got this idea. Hey, man, look, I need you to get some stuff together. And we're going to do this whole book thing. And Cass is like, okay. Okay, we'll do that. One of the poems, again, it starts with a pop star, and I asked him like moments before we started the show that he would read it, and I do owe him absolutely for finding it on such short notice. But it shows a little of his vocal range, just to give a taste of it. It touches on pop stars, Britney Spears in particular. And we haven't had people read before on the show, but with so much talk about sermons, where inspiration comes from, the design of a poem, and now pop stars and musicians, Casanova, that was a long way to out you with a poetry book coming out this fall, early winter of 2019. Please read that poem for us.
All right. So I'm going to read the poem first and we'll tell you the backstory behind it, because it's actually kind of funny. All right. It's called Urban Teacher's Playlist. The cacophony of profanity condenses over my head as my hands clatter these words like grain, while TLC's waterfalls play. And a student unleashes a torrent of complaints, and another types harder and faster than I do as we attempt to make our deadlines. Erykah Badu, find me on a plane and give me your window seat, because I need an escape. A getaway from the straitjacket that has become my life. You know, a beach or an island away from Ohio whitewashed winter and muddy confusion, which is called Lancaster. Miss LeGrain, do I have to write this poem? Yes, you have to do it. But I don't know how to write no poem. My soul shakes and turns cold as she continues her syncopated rapping on the keyboard, and I focus myself on this poem. I want to scream and shout and let it all out. Yes, Brittany, I understand your once ball crazed life. It goes on and on and on and on, and I wish it would stop.
I love that poem more every time I see. I love that poem every time I hear it, man. Tell us the backstory. Tell us the backstory before I get all into it again.
I was working on stuff for grad school, and I used to have one of the largest classrooms in the at my former job. I painted a blue wall. We just kicked it, like that was home. So I always had like 10 kids sitting around me while I was working, and they're on their laptops, on my laptop, and I was listening to like my R&B playlist. So, you know, Waters Falls, I love me some Erykah Badu, like old and new Erykah. That's my girl. And this is literally what is happening in the moment. And at the end, literally, Scream and Shout is playing when I'm like writing the last lines. Because mm-hmm. after the whole, I don't know how to write no poem line, I just have to sit there. I'm like, why am I doing this? And then like, I really was right. Like she said that line, I started writing this poem. I stopped writing a paper to write this poem.
And that's what, cause what I love about it again is all the, I'm not going to go on and on. Like I typically do when I love something, which is a bunch of broken sentences that really goes nowhere. I'm going to take a breath. And what I love about this poem and everything that you just explained is that it had a kernel of something that you had in mind, and then you incorporated through the poem things that were going on in real time. And you don't have to know that to get swept up in that energy of the creation of it. That energy that I mentioned when this interview first started with you, it carries through everything you do. And I know that I feel like I've beaten that point down throughout this interview. And the reason I do that is because it has that integrity. It has that commitment. Because more than ever, I feel and I believe that this commitment is not something you can turn off and on. You know, it's something that radiates in you from the minute you get up to the minute you go to bed. And maybe even while you dream, because, you know, you carry us into it. You know, you in the way that you talk about your music career and your sermons, it's invigorating. It's enlivening. You know, I mean, you want to know more. And that's why I wanted to break the mold a little bit and have you read that poem, because it's got that spiritual, oh, give me strength. I can't, you know, I don't want to write no poem. We've all three of us, again, I didn't even think about this till this moment. We were all teachers and had that moment of like, where you had to just be quiet and go, mm-hmm. But inside you're like, I would choke you out if you didn't say, you know? You know? and it's just, it radiates out of you, man. And I want people, the company is what it, CG, say it again.
CG Create.
CG Create. And that's your website?
Yes.
And what's the web address so folks can find it?
The web address is cgcreate.online.
All right, Cass, let's move on to the Indiegogo campaign. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
All right. So we all know to start something, it takes finances. That's the world we live in. For years throughout history, people were supported by patrons. So these people were the ones who kind of helped take care of the artists, helped take care of the creative people. So they had to focus on just creating the work. Now, we've taken that patron culture and moved it to crowdfunding, such as Indiegogo, Kickstarter, all those groups. Now, the goal for this fundraiser is to launch this business and also to release both albums. To make that happen, I need $2,000. Right. $2,000. And we need it by August 10th. So the perks include, if you give like a dollar or more, you get a copy of the single, Consuming Fire Part 1, early. Like, as soon as I say, yes, it's good, we're releasing it, you get it. Then it moves on from there. It gives you early access to part one, and you'll get physical copies of part one, to the highest level, the $100 level, to where you get your name in the CD liner notes for both parts. What? So all I'm asking for is your support for your contribution, so that way I'm able to reach the world with the sound, with these words, with everything that I have to give to help people become creative and also to grow.
And your album, now your albums, you have one that's out. What's the one that's out?
All right. Okay. So let's work through them. So Worshipper Mentality was the debut release in 2016 from Tate Music Group. I actually need to tell y'all that story. Just remind me to tell you that story.
Okay.
So it was out. Then it disappeared. It's on my Bandcamp. But it should be coming back out on June 21st to all digital outlets. Because CG Create took over.
Good.
There's also a concert. After I released A Worshipper Mentality, I did a worship and word night at a church in Columbus. And oh, man, it was good. It was so good. I released it on Bandcamp. It's called Worship and Word Encounter, The Outpouring. If it was like physical disc, it'll be two discs. The first one is the worship. It's an hour. You'll be all right. And then the second one is the message. It's actually one of my favorite messages to preach, called The Outpouring, where I break down Joel 2 and really, like, this is the steps to revival. Follow them. Mm-hmm. And then there was a piece that, Cliff, you actually commissioned called You Are Stronger, which is also out.
Yes.
And that was fun to do. And Songs from the Journey, Parts 1 and 2. They should be out 2019 and 2020 respectively. And all I'm going to say is buckle your seatbelt. Just buckle your seatbelt.
Yes. No, but do you feel like, you know, with the tearing down and the fear and trembling and then the trial by fire, and then the man you are now, do you feel like where you sit now, that you know, the man that's Casanova Green today, do you feel like you're a man reborn from all this chaos?
Yes. We church folk call it refining. Everybody talks about the refiner's fire, but don't really understand the significance of it. That yes, the gold has always been gold, but as you stick it in the fire, the impurities come out. And then you're supposed to stick it in, take it out, slough off the top, and keep going until it gets to the purity that you want it to be. For me, this is actually the most peaceful and the happiest I've been in my entire life. I feel like that I am at a place now to where I am actually truly fulfilling my purpose and truly fulfilling my calling. And it took me stepping out afraid and also making conscious decisions that I had no other option. This is an apostle I'm friends with. He's also one of our coverings for True Vision. His name is Myron Prevost. He always says, you have no option. I had no option, especially when it came to music. Now I can tell you the Tate Music Group story. Yes, I said it. Let me tell you what happened. Amadeus, you'll be like, what? So I got an email 3 weeks after I got married, saying, hey, we want to sign you to a record deal. I was like, ah! My wife was like, oh, but we just got married. Ah! We signed it. We raised the money to pay for the recording. I flew down to Oklahoma, did the recording. I recorded that CD in 2 days.
That's fast. That's really fast.
Yeah, that's when I did all the vocal parts and everything. So I was in the clouds and hitting the notes. Mm-hmm. It was released January 26, 2016. Did a big old release concert, everything. It was awesome. And then a year and some change later, I came back from my graduate residency, and I'm a part of some worship leader groups on Facebook, and I went to go share it, and it wasn't there.
Mm.
It was not on any digital platforms. We had received information that the label was closing. And I'm like, okay, cool. They're like, okay, give us $50 and we will, we'll give you everything back. We'll give you all the masters and all that stuff back. And, you know, I went to go pay it. Like, my father-in-law was actually going to go pay it, and something said, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For some people, something for me, it's called the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost said, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay. So I was sitting out, and I was like really beating up myself because I feel like I had failed. I didn't do enough to push the album. You know, if I would have just did my part. Come to find out, and this is public knowledge, this is not gossip. This, you Google Tate Music Group, and you'll see all this stuff come up. The president and the CEO, who are father and son, were embezzling funds and gambling them away.
Mm.
So it's not just me. It's every artist and every author on the roster. So I'm just sitting here, and so I'm sitting here going, okay, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? People ask, where's the project at? I'm like, for like months, I couldn't talk about it. But my wife and I had a conversation a year ago before I got ready to graduate. And she said, you understand with this degree, you can do nothing else free. That was my wife, y'all. Like, I'm like, I know. And I was like showering, and like my whole concept for CG Create came. And the first thing was, whatever it takes, re-release the first album. So what happened is I'm looking at everything. I just happened to go on Oklahoma's Attorney General site. Because they broke their contract, I got everything back for free.
Yep.
There you go. Beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful.
And it, there is, these are stories that you know, I'm not going to make this about me. I had more than one situation where I do believe that there are, in the publishing business and in the music business, there are more predators than legitimate businessmen and women. Mm-hmm. And I always call it the Beatles disease. It's not something you get from insects, but how the band, you know, the Beatles signed a contract early when they didn't know any better, and they still don't have the rights to their music. You know, the ones that are left, Paul and Ringo, still don't have the rights. I think that's been a longstanding travesty, because in the excitement and the youth, they prey upon that. You may have already answered this question for me, but have you thought, or do you have any plans to create your own label?
Okay. It's in the works. It's been a part of the plan, but I'm waiting. Mm-hmm. With the LLC, I can pretty much do whatever I want. So the music side of things is a part of who I am. So I can release it through the LLC. I can do all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And, you know, everything comes from that place. And most of all, I realize, one, I should listen to my godfather, two, because he told me, just do it yourself. shout out to Steve Riggs. I love that man. Anyway, it made me realize that if I want to see what I want to see, and if the vision that God has given me needs to come to pass, I got to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then surround myself with people who see the vision and see the worth of the vision to help me make it happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To refine this a little, you got to have the commitment and the no options, because like in a romantic relationship or a business plan, if you have a plan B, plan A is not going to work. You have to completely commit. But what we just brought in here, what you just said, if I'm hearing you correctly, is to have that commitment, but listen to God and take deliberate steps. Like I said, you know, it's like, you know, you have a plan to do this, to create a label, but you're not going to take it all in one big bite. You're going to take steps and think it through. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, just taking steps and really thinking it through. And again, technically, CG Create is a label.
Yep.
It's a label for me.
Yep.
Well, which, I mean, it makes so much sense, especially in the current kind of musical world. Honestly, unless you're getting a really, really great upside from a potential label, why would you choose to do something other than put your own stuff out, you know?
Right. I mean, I'm not going to be somebody's payday loan. Let's just keep it real.
Exactly.
Everybody's like, this artist is balling. No. That's a payday loan. You gotta understand. That's called an advance. And then you better hope your record sales were worth the advance, because anything that you don't see a dime until your advance is paid back.
Well, and the best part is, you see these rappers who, you know, it's like their first album, and they're going around with all this, you know, jewelry and stuff that's rented. And the first thing that pops in my head is, you know, that's recoupable, right? Like, you know, you gotta pay that back first, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
Right, but the thing is, especially with rappers and with me dealing with students that I've had to deal with, I look at them and go, they like, people prey on the fact that they don't have financial savvy, that they have been poor all their lives.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
They prey on that, because they know that they're going to be willing to do whatever it takes to maintain that image.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in fact, they do whatever it takes to maintain the image now.
Are, do you think, I mean, in time, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself here, but like you said that, and on your website that you're going to be eventually start teaching courses, is the way you made this business work for you going to be one of those courses that you teach folks?
No, and here's why. I know I am not a businessman. That is not my thing. If someone was to ask me about how to do this, it was simply file the LLC, get the EIN, do what you're supposed to do, and don't get embezzled. I'm all right.
Yeah. I love it. The reason I like that question, and there's no wrong answer, and the reason I love yours so much, is that the first thing that my daddy told me when I got out of LLC, he's like, boy, you have an attorney, right? I said, yes, sir. He says, you have an accountant, right? I was like, oh, no. He's like, boy, listen to me. Listen to me. None of y'all's daddy does that. Listen to me. Listen to me. And he irritates the crap out of you. He's like, yeah, I'm listening. And he goes, the popo didn't care, didn't catch Al Capone. The IRS did. Go get you an accountant. And it's all that. And I'm serious. Boy, listen to me. Yeah. The police called Al Capone, didn't catch Al Capone. The IRS did. The point of that is that, you know, you find out what you know well, and then what you don't, you leave to someone who does that you trust.
Right. That's exactly. Right?
You know what you're saying?
Right. But you also have to remember that those people who know it well and will do it well also cost money.
Right.
So that's why, like, when you're starting out and doing this stuff, you have to make sure you know what's going on and pray that you're blessed with people. I am blessed with people who are accountants, who are lawyers, who are friends, not like, oh, we're cool. We're like, these are people who I went to college with, who, you know, we've invested time into each other. I can be like, hey, A, B, C, D. All right, cool. Let's look into it. And then they'll help me until I can get to the point where it's like, okay, I can pay all these people.
That's perfect.
And that's the big thing. People, part of the reason people don't do stuff like this is because, well, it's the money thing, blah, 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 blah. We did a fundraiser to start the CD. I handled some stuff. We had about $100 left. Rachel and I seeded our own money to get the LLC.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Ohio, it costs $99. Do mm-hmm. not go to a firm. Go directly through it with the state. Save you some money. You do not need a statutory agent. Just have stuff sent to your house. Yep. So it doesn't. It costs more to buy clothes than to start your own business.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I honestly believe it. I mean, I think we could take this on for hours, and it isn't my energy to do so, but I won't. I promise. it's important that people. This is the kind of thing that I want the show to embody, and the education, and people who, like, I opened up by saying people who run by gerunds. What I'm going to do, what I'm thinking about doing, but never do. You don't get a lot out of that. You know, it's people that have enough mileage in different places to speak with some kind of authority, but then still have that humility that I respect so much in you to say, but I don't have all the answers, because in my opinion, that's a realistic view of the journey that we take in this, because in art, you know, there is a lot of leeway in how you produce it and how it sounds, how it reads, how it looks. But with the business side of things, it's the same as if you're trying to open up a law firm or if you're trying to open up a car dealership. You've got to have this in place and this in place. And if you don't know how to do it, go find someone who does, because oftentimes I think people don't dream big enough. And so they think, oh, well, I have to deal with that later. I'll deal with it later. And then the IRS comes knocking and you have a big problem you got to deal with now. So, I mean, this is what I love about it now, is that I get invigorated about the having both feet planted in reality, because creators so often keep their head in the clouds. They don't think about this stuff.
Right. I mean, if this is going to be your bread and butter, if this is going to be what's going to feed your family, you better make sure that you stay on top of your game at all times.
Yeah.
You know, just it all goes back to having that thought. There are still things I'm trying to figure out. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not. Again, this has been 2 weeks.
yeah. No, right. Absolutely.
Well, there's things I'm still trying to figure out. Like, one of the big things is how much do I want people to pay me? Because, again, this is like I've done this for free or for, like, I take a love offer for years. But now right. I'm like, okay, I really need to consider this. Like, how much is my time worth?
Exactly. And exactly. What is your value?
Right. As creative people, we have to always think about the worth of our time, not just the moment that we're speaking, but also the preparation for it, the drive up there. I live 30 minutes outside of Columbus, Ohio. So, you know, so I'm committing to make that drive to come mm-hmm. to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like for preaching the prayer, like, you know, the time preparing, you know, making sure even the time, making sure that your product is together and all that stuff. Like, you have to really, you really have to sit down and go, okay, how much is my time worth? And then make sure it's quantifiable, but also have some flex with it. So that way you are universally marketable. Like, nobody's going to pay no one's going to pay $20,000 for you and you ain't released one song.
Right.
True.
Right. Kessa, let me cast this your way. As you develop your company, like say every 6 months or so, would you be interested in coming back on the show and talking about the evolution and how this happens in real time in your life?
Oh yeah, of course.
That'd be great.
Now, but I know we're getting short on time, and I want to put this in there because it's something I look forward to every Sunday morning. You know what I was saying? How do people tune into your Sunday morning hellos? Is it only going to fail Facebook? Do they come find you on Facebook?
Oh, Lord. Okay. So that means I got to move this to a different spot. Okay. So my Sunday morning videos or Sunday afternoon, whenever I'm heading to church videos, they're on my personal Facebook page. I have a feeling after this, I'm going to have to move them to the professional page.
Welcome to the party.
Amadeus like, yes.
It'd be a good thing.
Yep.
Yeah. You can be my friend.
All right.
But what I'll probably do, because July I'm on sabbatical, so Cliff, I'm sorry, you'll be without your videos. Right. Listen to the church podcast. It'll bless you.
I got you. I'll get my fix.
Or you just call me, be like, encourage me. Be like, encourage. Get off the phone. Bye. So what I'll probably do is in August, I will move it to my to the CG Create page on Facebook. So that way everybody can experience the joy that Clifford experiences every Sunday. Yes. Because, like, you don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. It's been everything from I'm just, like, talking about the weather and stuff to we have a full-blown healing and deliverance service.
He starts off in song. That's my favorite. You can be in the – it's better than Prozac. You wake – you know, so you just tune in. And I'm not fault-selling. I challenge people to tune into this with a bad mood to write me and say you're wrong. I challenge you to tune in and see if you still have that bad mood. It won't happen.
That's a great thing. Okay, I'm looking forward to this.
When is this coming out?
Next Thursday.
I'm all about this. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I'll just start throwing them to my professional page. Like, enjoy it.
All right.
what else? This has actually been a lot of fun.
I'm having a lot of fun, man. Hey, I have first of all, I mean, I've got a couple kind of like random questions I want to ask at the end. Just try it out. I haven't done this on the podcast before, but I think you would be a great person to try this with. But I want to say, first of all, I really want to say thank you for coming and for sharing your energy and your creativity and your commitment and your joy in that commitment with our audience. And I think it's really going to be useful to them. And it's great to connect with you as well. I think all three of us on this call are very like-minded people. In fact, you and I are going through some very similar stuff, man. I think we probably got to connect outside of here, 'cause there's a lot of similarities going on with what we're talking about here.
We can talk.
All right, man. That sounds good. We'll definitely do it. But here's a few questions, and just answer these however they come to you. Okay. So this isn't specific at you. So we've talked about how you kind of are in practice of letting revelation come to you, and this is how you're creating things. Let me ask this. What's your kryptonite?
That's a good one.
What is my kryptonite? Stress and foolishness.
That's a great answer.
Yes, it is.
That's a great answer.
That's my answer.
I don't take kindly to foolishness. Like, I'm about to set some things in order of Fridays. Don't call me. That's going to be.
Yeah.
Because literally Fridays, it is good to take a Sabbath. I'm learning that now after 22 years of ministry. It is good to take a Sabbath. So Fridays are going to be my Sabbath. That's my family day. I'm really been building it into my teaching schedule from here on out, that Fridays, unless I have a ministry engagement, I do nothing. Even if I have a ministry engagement, don't call me. Don't tell me your problems. Don't stress me out. I don't want to hear your foolishness, because that gives me the freedom to be the best that I can be.
Yes. That's great. Okay. That's a really good one, actually. And then let's see here. What is the first piece of music you can remember that made you cry?
There's a song that my mom used to sing in the church choir. I would sing it, but we might have to pay for it, so I'm not going to sing it. The song is called Calling My Name by Hezekiah Walker and the Love Fellowship Crusade Choir. Like, I love that song to this day. But I think it was, I was sitting in church, and it was, I think it was the first time they did it. I was young, like probably 5 or 6. And like, I vividly remember my mom doing the first, like my mom singing the first ad lib, not even the first verse. And, you know, she just came in like, when you tear in the eye.
One of those songs that just changes the room, huh?
Mm-hmm. That song, because from as an adult, that song is so visceral. It's like, you know, God, I've messed up. God, I've sinned. God, I've fallen short. But you're still calling my name, like, yeah. you're still loving me. Oh man, that song jacked you up.
I'm gonna look it up. Now, let me just ask. This is the last thing for me in the show, which is, if you could give one piece of advice or have one ask of the audience that's listening to this, what would you like to impart to them?
Making a breath. Dang, there's a lot. Be you and do you. Be you and do you. We're living in a time right now where people are living on facades and living in this whole fake issue. And, you know, even looking at our cultural and political climate, a lot of people are making decisions based on the voice of the crowd, not the voice in their heart. For me, I don't seek this out to become famous. If I sought this out to become famous, I'd be a totally different person. I did the whole recording artist thing. That's not my thing. I'm a worshiper. I'm a writer. I'm a teacher. That's what I do. And living and resting in that, like, this is my lane. This is what I do. And understanding that my lane has worth has allowed me the freedom in all forms to be myself. Like, this is not a front. Literally, if you call me, it's going to be just like this. My students love it because it's literally just like this. Because I've, for the first time in my life, there's a whole backstory with this. The first time in my life, I feel comfortable in the skin that I am in. And I'm able to be of best use and of good use as myself. So be you, do you. If your sound is different, be different. If your poetry is different, be different. Okay, but commit to that difference and see everything open up.
Be you, do you. That's perfect. Sonova Green for a great interview. We're looking forward to keeping track with how everything turns out for your new ventures, and we look forward to having you back at a later date to kind of check in and see how it all develops. And the links to both his website and his Indiegogo campaign are in the show notes. .com. You can find me at michaelamade.com or worldpoetryopenmic.net. Live.com. The goal of this podcast is to give you ideas and tactics that you can apply to your own creative life.
apply right away. Your obstacles creatively. Learn to trust your heart, for it's easy to lose your path in this business of music and poetry.